My name is Jeremy Devins, and this is episode 71 of the Yoga Teacher Training Podcast, How I Became a Yoga Teacher. Now, of course, yoga teacher training was one of the most life-changing things that I've done, and it's a whole podcast all about that and how much I love it. But I don't go into my own personal story a whole lot, so I figured I'm just going to do that all here on this episode, and some pieces of it come up as I go through other things. But if you're curious to know who I am, where I come from, how I got to be at this point in my own yoga journey, and maybe some things that you can learn from it on your path, that's what this episode is all about. So, of course, this is leading up to the free 60-minute YTT workshop this Thursday. And if you're listening to this later, you can get the replay now for a limited time at quietmind.yoga/YTT workshop or the link in the show notes. It's going to be an awesome experience. I'm going to be sharing 10 of the key things that I've learned in my now 11 years of teaching to help you build confidence, have clarity, and how to build a career teaching yoga, doing work that you love if you so desire. So that's at quietmind.yoga/YTT workshop. It's going to be really fun. We got a lot of people joining from around the world. So hopefully you can join us as well. And if you can be there live, you enter to win a free Vedic astrology reading with me, which is a sister science of yoga that I teach about on the Quiet Mind Astrology podcast. So today's topic is all about my story, and hopefully in a way that is somehow resonant for you and helps you get some perspective on where you are in your journey, because it's a little self-indulgent, and I don't like to just focus on myself in ways that aren't helpful to you. But in this case, I will just kind of use this episode for that and get all self-indulgent and just tell all my story. So if it gets long-winded and boring, just feel free to skip this one. But hopefully it's helpful in some way. So first of all, I should say I didn't take teacher training to become a teacher. And it was really just for my own personal growth and studies. And I'd been doing things like that or curious about things like that for a long time. But that was the first time I really jumped into this new path on my yoga journey and eventually to become a teacher. But I've got to go all the way back to my childhood, which if you've heard my astrology podcast, you've heard me talk about how as a kid I was very interested in all things esoteric, hidden, occult, different, mystical, right? I was even curious and considered, I was attracted to the idea of becoming a monk, just the idea of having a very simple life, just get up, meditate, do practices, be extremely disciplined. Like that all actually appealed to me, and I was very interested in that. And I've, you know, slowly over time created a very simple, minimal, kind of clean life in general. And even before I was into yoga, I was starting to go in that direction. So if the opportunity had come up, I might have just got on a plane and moved to China or Japan and become a monk my whole life. If the opportunity was there, I probably would have said yes in my teens and early 20s. But it wasn't there. But instead, I was flipping through public access once when I was around 14. And there was some interesting Chinese guy doing some Chinese practices on the TV. Maybe it was Qigong. Maybe it was Tai Chi. I don't know what it was, but I was very interested. And he said to do certain things like put your hand here over your belly and make this movement and notice this feeling in your body. And I'd never done anything like that before. It was so outside of my paradigm at the time that I just like, oh, you know, kind of make fun of it. Like I laughed at it with my friends. And then like the next time I saw it on TV and I was alone, I was like, I'm gonna actually try this and see how I feel. See if I can feel this energy he's talking about. And I did. It was just mind blowing to me. Like I was feeling the chi, the energy in my stomach. It was like a light switch was turned on that I'd never noticed before. So I was like, okay, there's something to this and I wanna learn more. So I didn't keep going in that direction. You think, well, maybe I started watching all those public access shows. Well, I didn't. Maybe I, in another timeline I did, but in this timeline I did not. And I don't even remember. I think I tried to find his show, but it was like just random times on public access. It was very tricky to kind of find when it actually was on. And I was just kind of in a different mindset at the time. Like I was pretty unhealthy and just kind of living in my teenage world and hanging out with my friends and playing guitar and focused on music. So that all seemed kind of silly. But then one of my best friends actually had this book called The Tao of Jeet Kune Do by Bruce Lee. Maybe you've heard of this or seen it. It's not super popular or commonly known, but basically he's talking about Jeet Kune Do, this type of martial art that he taught And the Tao of it, the way of it, the Tao means the way, which I didn't know at the time, but it's the sort of philosophy of why he did the martial arts he did the way he did. And that was really interesting. And I didn't get into martial arts either, but the philosophy of it was really interesting to me. So I was getting interested into the movement of energy in the body and the philosophy of how bodies work and move. And that's what was really sticking with me. And then I found Alan Watts. Like, I'd been looking for different, maybe philosophy teachers. Like, I didn't know. Like, there's psychologists. Like, I didn't know what to really even look for back then. But in looking for different, like, Kierkegaard audiobooks and Nietzsche audiobooks and these different philosophers throughout history, one of the things that I wound up downloading was an Alan Watts recording. And actually, still remember where I was when I first heard it. And the feeling I had when I first heard it, it was unlike anything else I had heard. And he was talking about yoga, and it was the first time I really heard the word. Like, I'd probably heard it before, but now I was like, what is this yoga thing? I want to know more about that. And then I got really into Alan Watts, and now, this time I did get into everything I could find about Alan Watts and listen to probably hundreds of hours. That's probably not an exaggeration. Basically, every Alan Watts recording that I could find in the world, I was listening to that over and over again, and I was really interested, and I loved it. And that was kind of my life for about 2 years, where I was working at a job stocking shelves, which I didn't love, but I was really happy I could listen to something while I was doing it. So I was just like moving my body and listening to audio. In that time, I was just listening to all the Alan Watts things I could, and lots of different albums, because I was a musician as well, and studying music in that way, and listening to a lot of different interesting interviews with people and philosophers and things like that. But the Alan Watts stuff really stuck with me. And it was all the stuff to do with like the Hindu perspective of the universe and how karma plays out in our lives, and the idea of Vedanta philosophy, which is something I teach now in my yoga teacher trainings. And these philosophies of meditation and yoga and all these things wrapped up in Hinduism and Taoism and different modalities, that was just so fascinating to me. So that was my life for a while. And in that same time, I was kind of getting into a rut in my own life and into a depression. And I was alone a lot. So I was now in my early 20s, and a lot of my friends got into drugs and alcohol, and I did not. And I never got into any of that. I smoked pot a little bit as a teenager, but I just didn't seem, I don't know, I just wasn't interested. And it seems kind of strange because I had to basically not hang out with my friends anymore, because I'd go to hang out and they would be like, all right, let's get drunk. And I'd be like, oh, I'm going to go home now. And I did get into working out and exercising in my late teens, early 20s. Like, as soon as I was 18, I joined a gym, and that helped a lot. But there was a very lonely sort of solemn feeling of like, I'm going on this path that no one else is going, and I feel like I can't really relate to my friends anymore. And this is a common thing that I hear with a lot of people getting into yoga or taking a teacher training or becoming more yogic in their lifestyle, where their old situations, their old friendships, their old scenarios kind of fall away. And there is a bit of a death, in a way, a grieving process that needs to happen as well. And I feel like that's what I was going through. I was feeling sort of isolated, alone. There was like some grief and sadness. And I needed to process that, and I'm glad that I did. But what really ultimately helped me process it was starting to meditate. Because I was hearing Alan Watts talk about meditation and yoga all the time, but I wasn't really practicing it yet. So I was fortunate. There was like a meditation oasis app or a podcast or something way back then in like 2005, 2006. And I started listening to that. I found just some basic books at the library. I've always been interested in going to the library and like reading everything I can. There's some books about Buddhism, a book about the Tao. Like, these things became really helpful to me. But it was finally when I went to a meditation class at the Minneapolis Zen Center, where I lived in Minnesota. And that was really interesting, because there was like a frequency to this meditation and this group energy that I never felt before. And actually spent the whole first meditation class that I went to just trying not to laugh out loud, because I was so giddy with, like, it just felt really free and fun and exciting and like, yes, this kind of yes energy. it was like the very opposite of that lonely sort of solemn depression that I was in by myself, where now it's like I was having to suppress laughter. Like I couldn't even, if I let it out, I would just laugh the entire time. And I told the guy at the end, he's like, that's okay. That's part, you know, that comes up. You can laugh. I'm pretty sure I would have just, I was like, I'm going to ruin the moment for everybody if I'm just laughing the whole time. So that doesn't really happen very often, but that first time it did. And it was like, I think something about my sort of essence or my soul or my spirit just knew like, this is where I want to be. And the teacher in the class was either my age or even younger. Like he did not seem like somebody out of reach or unrealistic, like some yogi he'd been doing it his whole life. And that was really interesting to me too, of like, this guy is like a peer and he's leading a meditation class. That's interesting. And I didn't really think about it till later, but that sort of set the spark in my head that like, you know, I could possibly do this too. So from there, I went to a couple more classes there, but I really found I like this place called Common Ground in Minneapolis. So those of you who are in that area, definitely recommend checking that out. I really like their energy there, and I'd go to the Sunday meditation group and they do these talks. It was really powerful. So now I had a spiritual practice. Now it wasn't just something theoretical. It wasn't just something I saw on public access, but I was actively going to a class every Sunday and going to occasionally other classes at the Zen Center or other places in town, because there's actually a pretty good meditation community in Minneapolis. When it's really cold and frigid, it's really easy to just sit still, and especially if you like cover up. So maybe there's something to the cold weather and meditation that go together really well. So that's where I started going to that Common Ground weekly, but I still didn't try yoga class. They had yoga classes there, but I was like, I don't know, what is that exactly? I'm not sure. And I was also going to the gym. Exercise was helping me a lot with my depression and just feeling really good in my body. And they had a yoga class and I sort of awkwardly walked by it many times, like kind of, maybe I should try it out. Is that for me? It seems like it's all women in there. Is it even allowed to have guys in there? And it just seems like they're stretching. Is that just like a waste of time? So I had all these questions and I remember going, just walking past it several times, and then like the way the building was set up, like I could go up to the weights area and then like look down at the classroom and like see everybody there. And it's like, just kind of contemplate, should I join next time? Maybe I should have joined today. I don't know. So it was like this whole internal conflict, but there's something in me is like, go there. That's the next thing. And I asked even the person at the front desk, like, what is the yoga class? Like, how do I do that? And she's like, just go to a class. It's fun. It's easy. Just go to the class. So you know, I finally just did it. And it was amazing. I had like reached this point where my workouts were helpful, but I was just kind of checked out on my headphones now, listening to stuff all the time. But in the yoga class, there's no headphones. You're just listening to your breath and the instruction. So it was like a meditation and exercise put together. It's like the two things that I've been doing that have been keeping me afloat, essentially, and keeping my mental health working, were now together in one room in the yoga class. So the physical strength and challenge, and also the mental focus and challenge. So obviously I was in love. I was like, this is amazing. And it was actually harder than a lot of the things I'd been doing in the gym. And I was pretty strong, but using just my body weight, I was actually shaking in a lot of poses and really impressed. It was a vinyasa class, it turns out, like a pretty advanced class, above my skill level at that point. But I was impressed with the people around me, like, wow, they're just so present and fit. And it seems like a really good energy here. It's like, I want to do this more. I want to do this every day. So I went to a class as soon as I could, and then more classes. And I found a teacher that I really liked. It's like, okay, I realized I like this teacher, not those other ones as much. And then the third class of hers I went to, she's like, okay, everybody, that's it for me. And I'm moving to Colorado now. And so that was it. She was moving away. And it's like the teacher I found was now leaving. And I actually went to her after class and said, hey, is there any way like you might record your classes, even just the audio? Like, I really like your classes and I want to practice more, and I would pay for that. Like if I could just, you know, hear the classes, I would practice with those. And she's like, no, I don't really know how to do that. I'm not good with tech and I don't know how to record them. But if I think of something, you know, I might do that. And just kind of, that was it. You know, I'd never heard from her again. As far as I know, maybe she's out there teaching and has online presence now. But that was way back in like 2008 or so. And if she had put out classes, I would have been top student there at every class. Like, I really liked it. And I was like, this is something I want to do more. But she moved away, and that stuck with me too. So this idea of, you know, being a student and wishing the teacher provided audio classes, that stuck with me. And later, eventually led to me making the Quiet Mind Yoga podcast, which is exactly that. It's audio recordings of my classes that I wished existed back then. So she moved away, and I was just looking online. There wasn't really much teaching online at the time, so I eventually found someone I really did like online. Her name is Sarah Klein. She does still have a lot of videos online. And she integrated Kundalini and yoga. So now I was like, oh, there's different styles. And I don't really know what that meant, but I liked her classes. So I did all of her classes. She had about 100 online. And I, you know, in 3 months, you could do 100 classes if you're doing them every day. And then I started repeating them. And then there was a day where my internet didn't work. So I didn't have the ability to watch it, but I could recall it from memory and repeated it that way. And her words and her phrases stuck in my head because I'd listened to them so many times. So at this point, like, I was basically teaching myself yoga and already able to practice pretty consistently, daily, almost every day. And it was like the thing I loved to do to start my day because it just made everything else go so much better. And my life was just on every level realigning and becoming improved. And I call this like a life realignment. And maybe you've had this for yourself where you start practicing regularly and like the way you communicate changes. I stopped swearing as much. I stopped talking in as much negative context. I stopped complaining about my life and started focusing on what I wanted to create. I stopped sort of feeling like a victim or reactive or defensive as much, right? We're all human. I definitely have my weaknesses and moments, but I definitely became much more aware of like, oh, when I say that, that doesn't feel good or true or right or connecting or whatever. And when I say this, it does feel good and true and connecting. And I want to create more of that. So my words, my speech, my daily routine, getting up earlier and going to sleep earlier. And I was already pretty healthy and, you know, not into like going out or drugs or anything, but it was just like even another level of that, which of course I didn't have really any friends at this point. So it was much needed that I would find them somehow. So my life realigned and I was like the most productive musically I'd ever been. And I had this old belief that like to make good art, you have to suffer. And that was especially like in the 90s when I was growing up, like that was kind of a thing in the zeitgeist of society of people like Kurt Cobain or, you know, even going back like Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, who've had like this idea that you have to suffer to make great art. And you have to like kind of be in this weird sort of detached, aloof state all the time. Even though I didn't do drugs, like I had that sort of belief and felt like the more I struggled and suffered, the more skillful I'd be in my art. But it was actually the inverse. And once I started doing yoga every day, I was the most productive I've ever been. And that in 1 year, I wrote over 50 songs. And previously I'd written, you know, maybe pieces and parts of a handful of songs. But now I was like just a machine and super focused and productive and not wasting as much time, and just everything was more aligned. And when you get into alignment, energy flows more easily. There's less resistance, less friction, less delays. So I wanted to write a song and I could do it in a day instead of letting it just linger for weeks or months. So everything just shifted. And one of the things that shifted was like, well, I know I don't like staying in Minnesota because it's so cold. It's just brutal in the winter. And I just always had this feeling like, I think people settled here in the summer, and then once they'd already built up their home, they're like, oh, wow, okay, that's what happens here in the winter. Well, I've already built everything here, so I'm just going to stay, right? But if they'd come in the winter, I don't think they would have stayed. You know, that's kind of my perspective, and growing up in those winters was really tough. I was sick every winter because it's just so cold, so brutal, so I was really excited to get out of that and get to a warmer climate. And I was also eating organic food all the time, so I wanted to live somewhere they had that. And doing yoga all the time, so I wanted to live in a city that yoga was like a big part of the city. So it was down to Santa Cruz, San Francisco, maybe Los Angeles, maybe Miami, maybe Austin, Texas, because those are also all big music towns and also big yoga towns. Those are like the big two things for me. And without ever coming to Austin, I moved to Austin with my partner at the time, and we both were ready for that. And it was just like perfect alignment. Yes, let's do it. And it was basically really easy. Like, we wrote down a list of everything we wanted, and we found that list a year later, and that's what happened. So we got really clear on our intention, and I think the yoga practice helps again with that, kind of clearing the path of feeling what's in alignment and kind of reducing resistance to that happening. So ended up moving to Austin, and that seemed like the best place for music and yoga, and got into some bands when I moved here and found some great, great musicians. There's just so many incredible musicians in Austin. But I really liked the yoga even more, and the yoga community was even more awesome. And I started to find actual like friends and community pretty quickly, and started volunteering at different places and getting involved in the community, and got volunteer gigs like right away, and a band right away, and yoga classes I liked right away. So it was pretty cool. Everything just kind of flowed pretty naturally. And I started asking for a good local teacher training, and everyone said yoga, yoga, which a lot of people now would know, like, you know, Yoga with Adrienne from YouTube. She did her training there. A lot of great teachers have come out of there, amazing teachers, and have worked there. And so that was like 2011 when I was moving to Austin, and I signed up for the teacher training. So I went to an info session, and I really resonated with the guy, this old hippie guy who was there. I was like, this is like some old Texas hippie guy. He seems cool. I found out he was the owner, and like, they started Yoga Yoga in his spare bedroom, him and his wife, and they would just do like one class a week, and it became two, and it eventually became a studio, and so on. So it's a really cool story of that whole company, which unfortunately no longer exists. Shortly before the pandemic, they were bought out by another company, but it was a really cool locally owned business and really great energy there. And I really resonated with that teacher, Matab, who I later found out also taught Vedic astrology. So that's a whole other path that I went on. And my two paths that I've been on of yoga and Vedic astrology, and I talk about the astrology part on the Quiet Mind Astrology podcast. You can listen to that. But on the yoga side of things, he was an amazing yoga teacher as well. And he had a background in Hatha yoga and Vinyasa, in the Ashtanga Vinyasa yoga. So that kind of informed some of his stuff. But mainly I learned Kundalini from him. That's what he teaches. Kundalini yoga is very energetic, a lot of breath work, mantra, mudras, very spiritual in nature. So that's my first yoga teacher training. So I kind of jumped into the deep end of esoteric stuff. And it felt like, I remember in Alan Watts' recordings, like he talked about this idea of like, what do you imagine heaven might be like, where you just like sit around on the clouds and God just tells you about life and like, you know, this is why I did that. And you know, this was the meaning of this. And it's just like this kind of endearing, sweet moment of like hanging out with God. And not to make too strong of a comparison or put Matav on too much of a pedestal, but I'd never experienced anything quite like that. And that was the reference that I had in my head. It's like, I'm sitting here listening to this old, wise old man with the white beard tell me about the meaning of life and the history of yoga and philosophy and all the way back through as far as back as we can go in our written history. And it just seems like this thing I envisioned and dreamed about listening to Alan Watts several years earlier of just kind of learning the meaning of life and discovering some of the secrets of the universe. So it was really special to me and really endearing to me and powerful experience that I was really doing just for myself. Like, I wanted to learn more about yoga and philosophy and spirituality. And I knew that I was kind of at my limit. Like, I'd watched all 100 of those classes from Sarah Klein that were available and multiple times. So I was ready for something new. And maybe you're at that phase in your practice as well, where it's like you feel like you kind of get what you're getting out of the yoga classes you go to, and you know there's more, and you're ready for that. So that's when teacher training starts to become really appealing, even if you're not going to be a teacher. And I was like, I don't know if I could be a teacher, but I think I'd be good at it. I'd like it. Like, there's a lot of things I like about it. But my focus was like, still, I'm a musician. That's what I'm going to do. And the teacher training is like for my own personal growth. And I might decide to teach occasionally. But of course, that didn't turn out that way exactly. So it was a 9-month training and gave us a lot of time. It's a pretty slow process of a lot of personal growth. And towards the end of it, we were doing a practicum where we go and demonstrate and practice teaching. And one of my teachers there, so we had a nice group of teachers leading the course. And she said, you know, you are a teacher already. And I was like, really? What? Like, because she'd watched me do my practicum and practice teaching. And I thought I did okay. And she's like, yeah, you're a teacher. You're definitely good at this. And I was like, oh, wow. Well, thank you. Okay. Well, I guess I'll try it out then. I'll try my hand at actually teaching. And I started taking opportunities to teach. So like our group created little opportunities. And I encourage you, whatever teacher training you take, to connect with your peers and find ways to apply what you're learning. Like we would get together to do study groups and we made flashcards and we all aced our tests because I think that was part of why, because we all practiced together and prepared together. And we all did excellent on our practicums because again, we practiced with each other before we were required to do it. So that's a really good strategy to make the most of your teacher training and to build great connections with others. So to practice teaching and applying what you're learning outside of the container of the actual training. And I took, Xenia was the woman who said this, you're a teacher, and I took those words to heart and found lots of little opportunities to teach, like with that group or in the community, free things, lots of free things like 4:30 a.m. sadhana. You know, it's kind of easy to get an opportunity to teach that because, you know, a lot of people, if they're going to get up there early, they, you know, oftentimes want to hold or receive rather than hold space. But it was a very generous community too. So I was very fortunate to be a part of an amazing community of people who were all like just very consistent and dedicated. So there's always people at this 4:30 a.m. class practicing, chanting for an hour, doing yoga for an hour, and reading from the Japji Sahib for about a half hour. So that's the holy book of the Sikhs, which is a powerful incantation or prayer to say in the morning. So it's a pretty incredible practice, 2.5 hours, almost every morning, 4:30 a.m., and cold showers, eating a very sattvic diet, all those things. So big time life realignment there, taking the Kundalini training, way more so than I could have imagined. And I grew more in that time than I could have imagined. It's really powerful. It was actually the first time I finished anything as well. So I had actually dropped out of high school because my family moved around all the time and I just, 11th grade, I just dropped out and got a GED. And that was the first time since the GED, I guess, that I actually finished something. Like I had thought about going to music school, but then I was like, I'm just going to make music and just perform and do that instead. But I never went to college. I thought about it a couple of times. I started to do it a couple of times, but I just didn't feel like that was my calling. I always felt like massive resistance and really wrong in my body every time I went in that direction. So I went towards the teacher training, and since then, I've been in trainings like that every day since, just constantly in trainings in different containers. So if you're not familiar with this idea, it's like a container is like somebody is holding an experience for you to go through a transformational process. And there are boundaries to it. There's a time limit to it. There's a whole expectations around it. And that is how growth really happens. So I had these different containers within the teacher training, but also since then. And one of those was my Hatha teacher training, which came after that, which included a mentorship with Cable, one of my teacher's mentors. And also then later a mentorship with Jen Wooten, Angie Knight. Angie I've had on this podcast a couple of times. And there's countless other trainings and certifications, anatomy, business, philosophy, all the things that go into what I share here on the podcast. It's about 10 years of just continuous learning to be able to share as much as I do here on the podcast now, where I just feel like I have so much to share that I'll never be able to get to it all. But like with Cable, like he taught me how to be myself as a teacher, right? And to be more authentic in my voice. For Jen, she taught me how to sense energy in a class and read energy in advanced postures and hold space for one student while addressing a whole group. And Angie taught me how to sequence without planning and just be more present and spontaneous in a class and in the moment. So those things really fueled me and motivated me and helped me become a better person and a better teacher. And along the way, someone said that I couldn't really make a living just teaching classes. So I took that as a challenge and did that for a time. And I taught 20 times a week for a couple months and was able to make a good living doing that. And so that's where now I'm out of the nest a bit and I'm taking all these trainings, but now I'm out teaching and finding my own voice and kind of making little games and challenges for myself like this. Like, you know, I was critical of Bikram yoga, so I gave myself a 30-day challenge to do Bikram every day for 30 days. And then I saw, you know, okay, I see why people get into this, even though it's not for me and not my approach, but I get it, you know. And I see how, like, I could make a living teaching 20 times a week if I needed to, and I see why some people might do that, and I see why some people would say that's not a good idea. So wherever you are, if you're post-teacher training, I encourage you to always be a student and always be learning and always be challenging yourself and always have these sort of games to keep it interesting. And then, of course, I started creating my own workshops and events and retreats. And my first big one was in 2016 when I made the first mentoring circle group that it was like a group of people learning the things you learn in teacher training, but who didn't want to be teachers. And it was a great group of students who are regulars at my classes. And one of them is Amy, who still comes to my weekly Zoom classes now today, which is really cool because she wouldn't be able to be in person if she was in the same area as me. So that's really cool to stay connected now well over 5 years. And the next big thing I did after that was in... I led a retreat, so there's a lot of things in between. I was very active, lots of events, retreats, things like that, workshops. But the next thing on my notes that I have, at least, is I started the Quiet Mind Yoga podcast in 2018, which you can still hear now on all the podcast platforms, weekly episodes, recording of classes, like I mentioned, right? So that was like what I wished existed 10 years earlier. I made that into the podcast. And then the next year, I made the Quiet Mind Yoga teacher training because now I wanted to kind of take this mentoring idea and everything I learned to help others become teachers, which was something I dreamed of. And you know, all these things along the way, like I never fully felt like I'm fully ready to do this. You know, it's like at some point you just got to go and do it. And that's a big thing for teachers that I see a lot. It's like, you're never really going to be fully ready. You just got to start. Like you're never fully ready to teach your first class. Like, you know, I'm fortunate that Xenia gave me that reflection and I've had mentors to give me the reflection of like, oh, okay, you got this down, you got that down. And mentors have saved me many, many years of time by saying like, okay, this is what you focus on, this is what you don't need to focus on. And that's why I want to give back as a mentor now because I see those things. And I was very fortunate to have that. But I was never like in a state where it's like, okay, I'm fully ready, just like, you know, can I sub your class now? It was more of like, you know, out of nowhere, I was like as a mentee of Jen and she's like, hey, could you sub the class tomorrow? I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Well, I guess so. You know, if you're asking, that means I'm ready. And if the opportunity is here, that must mean that you're ready. So rather than saying I'm going to wait until I'm ready, just wait until the opportunity is there. And if the desire is there, and if the question of if you're ready or not is even coming up, then the answer is yes. Because you wouldn't even have the question. There's this idea like, you know, the sort of arising of a desire means that you have the ability to fulfill that desire. And I think that's true. So one of those was creating a teacher training online because when I was in my teacher training, I had to miss a couple weekends and I loved it so much. I really didn't want to miss anything, but they didn't allow us to record anything. It was a different time and that's the way it was. So one of my wishes was to eventually make a teacher training where everything is recorded because there were so many things I wanted to go back to that I couldn't. So I made that in 2019 and I was one of the only maybe like 3 to 5 people online doing an online yoga teacher training. It was pretty novel at the time and I thought, I'm really ahead of the curve here. Turns out I was only about a year ahead of the curve because once COVID came, everybody went online. But there are so many benefits to doing a teacher training online that are really cool that I didn't get in my in-person trainings. So I created that and then also made the yoga teacher training podcast that you're listening to now. And in 2020, I started the Quiet Mind Yoga membership, which is the weekly yoga classes online that again, I was kind of always putting that off, like, I'll be ready for that a little later. But then COVID came, and it's like, well, now I need to do it now. And people need yoga, and it's really important, so I'm just going to start it now. And I did, and really fortunate that it's been very successful, and we have amazing students all around the world in there. And was able just this last year as well to hire my first teacher in there with Shannon Borthwick, who is a graduate of the Quiet Mind Yoga Teacher Training. So it's really cool. And she started as a podcast listener to taking the teacher training to now she's a teacher inside of the membership. And my hope is to create more success stories like that for people who maybe desire to teach. Shannon actually wasn't sure if she was going to teach. I have a fun recording of her from the training where she's like, I don't know if I'm going to teach, maybe. And then by the end of training, she was, you know, as the mentor, I could say, you're definitely ready, because I know what it's like to be on that side of things, to hear that. And I know when to look for now. And I can say she was 100% ready. And she's doing amazing with that as well. And she always gets amazing feedback on her classes. So that's a pretty cool thing to get to experience now on this side of it, to get to share these things that I love that have been so life-changing for me. And that's what I'll be doing at the free workshop this Thursday at quietmind.yoga/YTT workshop. And if you're listening to it later, sign up anyway. You get the replay for a limited time. And if you can join us live, I'll be giving away free reading there as well, $247 value, and some extra surprises on the free workshop as well. So quietmind.yoga/YTT workshop to check that out. And now the story continues. I've been fortunate to reach over 300,000 podcast downloads, and my goal is to grow Quiet Mind Yoga, to have more teachers, to reach more people around the world, and to share these teachings, and to help more yoga teachers become successful and have their own business and do work they love, because we need more teachers now more than ever, right? Just like one of my students, Trish, said, we can't have too many doctors. I agree, and I think we can't have too many yoga teachers as well. I really think everybody in the world can benefit from taking a yoga teacher training because of how much you learn about yourself and your health and the way you show up in the world. So that is invaluable, and that can benefit everybody, even if you don't want to be a teacher. But if you do want to be a teacher, of course, it's the obvious next step. So quietmind.yoga/YTT workshop to learn all about that. And hope you enjoyed learning all about me and my story. And if you have any other questions, you can reach out to me, jeremy@quietmind.yoga. So thank you for listening, and I look forward to sharing more with you next time on the Yoga Teacher Training Podcast.